And welcome back to the Pet Cash Pod presented by Profluence Sports. I'm your host, Andrew Pet Cash. Another great episode today. We're talking basketball and building a new league, the United Basketball League, UBL. The two co-founders came on, Ricky Davis, former NBA player. He actually averaged 20 points per game in 2003 with the Cleveland Cavaliers. He talks a little bit about his journey, what they're doing here, and it's super interesting. Alongside him, we have Chris Allison, his co-founder, built a bunch in the minor league sports space. They came together to build this league. We talk all about it. Yeah, it's right in between this youth sports college, pro basketball in between. We go through it all. Tons of just great stats and insights for basketball lovers themselves, but also really understanding leagues and where it's all going. Tons to gain from this. I learned a ton. This was an awesome one, but without further ado, let's dive in. Chris and Ricky, appreciate you hopping on today. Anytime there's a basketball one, I'm all for it. Yeah, tons of good stuff to touch on. But anyway, first off, appreciate you both hopping on.
Hey, man, appreciate you having us on. Great opportunity, you know, for me and you to let the world know what we're doing. And I just want to, you know, say appreciate the work you're doing by helping, you know, people like us, small businesses or groups or sports groups, to get that word out and to get people to understand the logic of you know, what they're trying to do. So kudos on you for what you're doing.
Appreciate that. So with that said, give us the rundown. What's UBL, United Basketball League, where it came from, the idea, how you both came together, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah. You know, this UBL, United Basketball League, you know, me and Chris kind of informally met for about seven, 8 months now, kind of trying to put both of our visions together on what we're trying to do. You know, I had the vision of a couple years ago, you know, just being a part of basketball in general and sports around the world, just had this idea of creating a basketball league to where we could touch the youth, to where we could touch ex-basketball players and ex-NBA players as well in the same league, being part of the NBA and being part of G League and Big Three, playing overseas, had an opportunity to kind of gauge those and have the experience of all those leagues, and, you know, trying to put all those leagues into one is what we're trying to do. So I had my idea with ex-NBA guys having an opportunity to having a transitional league, having a transitional time in their life where they're kind of looking on, you know, whether I still have to play or whether I go into business of basketball, trying to continue their legacy. So I wanted to have this league that we have to where all NBA guys can have an opportunity to transition and basically become business of basketball, have an opportunity to have jobs and not be lost in transition, trying to figure out what they want to do for 2 or 3 years. But, you know, going from being a current player to right into leadership and development, helping the youth, giving their experience out to the youth and the community. That's what I wanted to do. So joining with a mutual friend of mine, put me and Chris together. Chris had the same ideas, but Chris has been in the minor league, you know, game for seven, 8 years now. And he's had the mind and the capability to put this thing together on kind of his ideas and my ideas. And that's kind of how we've been going and formed the UBL.
Love that. And as we look at the state of basketball today, basketball has a lot of nuance to it, which a lot of people don't understand. If you could sort of just give us the scope of what it looks like from a six-year-old running around their local church playing up to obviously the NBA, which is the peak of basketball. What is all of that lies in between? And then, you know, what does sort of the UBL look like as you try to piece it all together?
Chris, you want to jump on?
Oh, sure. So, you know, going from 6 years old up to the pro level, there's a lot. You know, there's over 500,000 high school boys that play basketball every year. And that's just college, or that's high school mandated basketball. Basketball is the most played sport in the entire world. And that includes, you know, China, Europe, all those there. So you have all these people vying for this top spot to be the greatest in the world, to be LeBron James. I mean, that's why we buy the jerseys. That's why we buy the shoes, is because we want to be the top person. And that journey from the 6 year old running around on a carpet basketball court at their church to being able to actually get drafted into the NBA is a very, very slim chance of that actually happening. You have local programs in each city, in each state, at churches, at local rec centers, at gyms, programs that, you know, try to, and everybody's trying to reach to get those kids. You have the training there. Then you go into AAU, which starts at 7 years old, and you go up from there. So it's from seven all the way up to potentially 19, depending on whenever you're born, you'd be playing in an AAU program. Then whenever middle school hits, you have that whittles down a little bit for those guys that are actually going to be able to play on a middle school team. Then the middle school kind of develops down into the high school, and that's where you have these superstars coming out of high school and being able to transition. Then you have guys that go to play into college, getting a scholarship. So you go from 500,000 boys playing high school basketball every year to 18,000 men playing college basketball every year. That's a huge drop off whenever it comes to numbers. And then whenever you go domestically in the US, you go to the NBA or G League, only 120 guys out of those potential 18,000 get drafted. But now you have a new age of overtime elite where four of the top 10 that got drafted were from overtime elite. So now there's a disparity between the opportunity for guys going through the process, the minute process. After they changed the rule, you can't go straight from high school to the pros anymore. You have to, you know, have at least 1 year of college or go to a prep school. So now there's that insertion there. Where we fit in is we fit in that age right after high school and right before the G League or NBA. So we kind of can be a prep school type of route where you can play domestically. We want to make sure that people still maintain their eligibility if they do want to go to college. So there is a nuance there that we're working on. But, you know, guys coming out of college, D1, majority of those guys don't want to go overseas, but they'll go overseas if there's an opportunity to make money. So we fit in there. We want to be very clear from the beginning. We are in no way, shape, or form wanting to compete with the NBA or the G League. We want to be a complement to the opportunity for players to be able to go. If out of 18,000 guys, let's just say a quarter of them have the are graduating and going on. So you have, you know, 4,500 guys, only 120 of them are going to get drafted. So there's a great amount of guys that have the opportunity and the ability to be able to play. And so you have parents, you have grandparents, you have cousins, uncles, you have family members, neighbors that have been supporting this kid from 10 years old all the way through them going to college. And then now their career is over at 22. Why did they spend 12 years to go to college and get an education is the hope, right? But a lot of those guys want to continue playing basketball and they have another good 5 to 10 years to be able to play the sport. And so our opportunity here is to be able to build organizations throughout the US domestically right now through our plan for them to be able to transition from high school or college to be able to play domestically, represent their cities, represent their school, and be able to continue the sport that they love and play from there.
Yeah. And Chris, I was going to come over to you here, Ricky, too, especially on the international side as well. If you can touch on that, because we are seeing an influx of in the college ranks, but especially in the NBA, where even if you look at it now, depending on what you say, like 3 of the top 5 players in the NBA are from outside the United States.
Absolutely. And that even shortens the window opportunity for guys domestically, you know, because they're drafting guys from international players and, you know, 2-3 guys in each country, you know, so that even shortens the window and the percentage for these guys to play even more. And we want to be that platform for that development, you know, because there's a lot of guys and a lot of kids that just need 1 or 2 more years of development. You know, it's just being around the sport, seeing a lot of guys not make it from my college team, my high school teams, guys not getting drafted and guys not being able to continue their career. So this UBL is going to be that platform for those guys that just need 1 more year of development, or just, you know, just 1 more year of college or post-grad or whatever you want to call it, you know, because that's all they need. And their career is over after that. But not only that, they'll have the opportunity to also be able to do the business of basketballs too, as well. It's another platform to have them ready when they're done with college to be able to, for guys that go into sports management, to have a lot of positions around the world for these guys to transition in, get ready and prepare to go to the G League and the NBA next. So, you know, we'll be that platform for those kids on the court and off the court as well.
And when you look at some of these emerging leagues, I know, Chris, you brought up Overtime Elite earlier. What are you seeing? What are you learning? What does that landscape even look like currently? Because even 20 years ago, there was really just NBA, NCAA, high school, AAU a little bit. But now it seems like there's a lot of different options and it varies across the entire space.
I think that people are looking for opportunities. You know, like I said, you have these parents and grandparents and cousins and neighbors that have invested in these kids and hey, you were number 121. You just didn't make it. So now all this time is happening. So it's an opportunity for them to be able to find a different route to be able to get to where they want to. And that's why these things are popping up. I remember the first time I heard Overtime Elite and that was happening. I was like, that's stupid. But now it's like, okay, everybody's trying to do it. You know, you have IMG, you have Oak Hill, you have all these prep schools. Overtime is essentially a prep school, you know, but they've married into the idea of NIL and that combination of being able to give players the opportunity to earn a wage while still training and preparing for that next phase. It's an idea. It's an idea that is proving to be financially good. We don't know the statistics of it's going to improve education, improve longevity of opportunities for those players whenever it comes to either them being in the NBA or their education or their business acumen. But it's working financially right now whenever it comes to people that are investing in it. So, you know, I obviously we like the idea and you think it's a great idea because we can utilize it. But I think that there's limited space to be able to do that. You know, they have 12 teams with 10 guys on it. It's 120 guys inside of Overtime. Four guys got drafted. So their numbers are just like college. And that's why we're encouraging the guys that are participating in this not to just skip college and go to this because we understand that, hey, And I'm not, I never played in the NBA, never played, you know, college basketball. So Ricky can attest to this more than I could. Once you're done, what do you do now? Where are those opportunities for you to be able to do that? And how do you move forward with that? And so that's where it's important for us to be able to ensure that the pathways that we're building continue their education, give them the education from the business standpoint. So that way they do have longevity in their careers.
And Ricky, I was going to come to you because there was no name, image, and likeness NIL in college. Does this sort of tailwind play into UBL at all of sort of the thought process? Or, you know, where's sort of the tailwinds of that? Because I'm sure it would have impacted everything when you played, you know, back in,
absolutely.
Back in, what was it, Iowa 20 years ago?
Iowa, yeah. 98, 98, yep, yep. No, it would have been great. I mean, if the NIL and they were doing that back when we were playing, I think more guys would have stuck in college, you know, got their education, took their time and not had to rush to make decisions on going professional. I think guys would have took their time, got their education, enjoyed college, you know, because college was so hard. You can't get a job. You can't receive money. Can't buy your clothes, can't buy your food. It's very strict. So you have that leeway to have financial means, to have food, to have a car, to have a house. I think a lot of guys would have stuck in school a lot more. But to, you know, to go back on that, the Overtime Elite, the UBL is so good because we're totally separate from that league. And we're not trying to compete with that league at all. But it's only certain players that can play in Overtime League. Like Chris said, it's only 120 guys that are able to play in that type of league. But, you know, where do you go next? There's really nowhere for anyone to go besides the NBA and the G League and overseas. So with this UBL, we're bringing in those different type of three or four tiers to be able to connect the players. So it's awesome.
2024, first season this year. What can people expect? What's that look like, Chris? Give us a little bit of the technology side of this as well. Because there is more than just a league. You have a bunch of other plans and stuff and sort of dip into however much of that you feel comfortable with.
Absolutely. A lot of what we're bringing to the table is taking bits and pieces from different leagues that have been successful and allowing us to be able to construct that here. If we step back a second and we look at, okay, so why do we think that basketball is going to work here in the US? Whenever, if you look at the scope, NBA and G League are all really that are making a dent within the US. There are plenty of other minor leagues within the US, but we want to take the step back and look at the approach of how we can actually make it long-term successful and not just piggyback off of one investor or finding a market owner to be able to come in and do that. You know, one of the things that we reference in our deck is a quote that you had where they're running out of millionaires and billionaires to be able to buy teams. And it's going to transition over to fan ownership. One of the models that we looked at was the USL, United Soccer League, and what they've been able to do, being able to take three tiers within the US, build over 170 teams between men and women, and put them in cities that you wouldn't think that would be able to house professional sports league. And how does soccer, the not even in the top three watch sport within the US, be able to have that much capacity? It's because the attention is on it. And it's focused within the youth within an organized system. And so for us, we want to be able to become just like soccer is in the US, how USL and the MLS work, how MLB, all these other leagues, the single A, triple A, summer college, bat league, the frontier league, and baseball, all of the sports besides football and basketball have this infrastructure. And so we want to be able to take that and implement that. We want to take the arena feel, the professional feel of pro sports, of the NBA, bring it to the local level and be able to give the experience. Some people, you know, if you live out in Idaho, Wyoming, North, South Dakota, trying to think of another state that doesn't have an NBA team in it, there's only 30 NBA teams with 50 states, and some of them have two, three teams already in it. How do those fans go? They have to drive hours to go to a game, so they have to build out. So why don't we bring the top talent that's available from these colleges, the D1, D2, college players, bring them to the local level in the same areas that they grew up in. They go Friday night being cheered on by your neighbors, by your cousins, by everybody. And then they don't see you ever play again in person because they would have to fly to Salt Lake City or go to New York to be able to watch that happen. So we're taking that and kind of marrying it down. If you follow basketball around the world, there's the NBL Australia, where they have NBL and then they have NBL One. NBL One, they took the six provinces of Australia, put a bunch of teams that they kind of took over other leagues, but you know, they built six divisions in the NBL One, but then they have pro teams that represent that same area. And so we're going to follow that same path. We're going to build state leagues within the US, and then we'll have a pro team that goes from there. We're still discussing if we're going to do promotion and relegation like soccer does. I love the concept of that. If your team wins, if your city wins, being able to move up to the next level and compete, that's kind of what we want to do. We want to bring the hometown feel, the state pride that you get from high school teams, from college teams, and we want to take it to the next level and be able to promote it from there. So this fall, we'll have two states that we're going to start with. We'll have eight teams in each state, and we will do regional combines around those areas to be able to draw people that live in those areas. I would rather a family drive an hour to go support their son or nephew or neighbor within those geographically placed teams, so that we're building a strong infrastructure, a strong fan base from that area. So we'll start off with two teams in the fall. The champion from the top four from each state will compete. They'll play, they'll be state champion, and then we'll have each state playing each other in a national championship at a neutral site. So that way we can develop from there. So that's what we're planning this fall, what we're working towards. We have a bunch of other nuances that come along with that, but that's our infrastructure for now. And in the spring, we will have eight teams from eight different states competing from there. So,
yeah, I mean, I'm here in Pittsburgh. I didn't have an NBA team. We got screwed here. So I had to drive up to Cleveland and watch Ricky Davis average 20 a game up there. So
Absolutely.
I guess in terms of the community aspect, you know, how do you plan to, this is not the right word because this sounds sounds a little aggressive, but like, how do you plan to infiltrate these communities and put your influence on it, make UBL this standard where it's like, okay, there's maybe like in Pittsburgh, for example, just for context for both of you, but also just the audience, there's three prep schools maybe in high school. No one really goes to them. They don't really play nationally. Not a great scene. Obviously, no pro basketball. You have Duquesne and Pitt and Robert Morris for college. Obviously, a bunch of D3s. You know, what does sort of that look like as you plant your flag in the ground within communities to make this a very attractive thing? Where, you know, I grew up wanting to play for the University of Pitt, but now it's like, oh, I want to play in the UBL as well at whatever age that is.
Yep. I mean, how we influence the community is through influencers. And that's where, you know, the biggest thing that we're bringing to the table is right now we want those people that are from those areas to come back and represent those teams, those communities, those organizations. That's the biggest thing that I took from Ricky, and what his plan was bringing ex-NBA guys back to their communities and being able to have them be the presidents, be the coaches, be the broadcasters, be those people. Because, and he could tell you the story where he went through trainings and went through different places, and there wasn't a space for them to go. So how we influence the community is by, one, bringing the influencers and the pro ambassadors that we've already posted on our social page. Those are people we had a conversation with somebody the other day. He goes, Ricky, this is what we've been talking about for the last 2 years. We've been trying to develop this and make this happen. And there's a slew of other people that haven't been placed or haven't been announced yet that are going to be able to come on board. And we're geographically locating them to make sure that they align with those communities. Because to your point, the reason that there's two or three reasons why we support groups. We live there, we like a player on that team, or it's a great place that has a great history. So if we're connecting with that on all three of those levels, we don't necessarily want people to play in the UBO over the University of Pitt. We want you to play at the University of Pitt and then come back and support your communities with other people.
Absolutely. And that as well. And not only that, fans and investing into the league, you know, we're building community there from the start. When they have the rights to vote, the rights to logos, the rights to colors, the rights to this, to that, they get more involved and they feel like they're involved. So right away, we're building community there with the influencers, bringing them back to the community there. Also setting up the foundation. You know, I'm real huge on foundation work. So we'll be starting a UBL foundation in those communities, building up youth programs in underserved communities and, you know, connecting the influencers with the community engagement, with the fans and just making it a community feel event that goes on. And I think that's how we will be rooted, seated, and not just asking fans to come buy a ticket and eat some popcorn. You know, as they buy tickets and eat popcorn, the investment comes back to their pockets. So we're engaging them right away, I think, from that aspect.
And I want to come back to you real quick, Ricky, but post basketball, what has your transition looked like? And I guess some of your other teammates or, you know, fellow people you played with or were affiliated with, you know, what's sort of that trajectory or path been like for you? Do you see this tying into the greater for more? I know you sort of mentioned, hey, come back. I'm just curious from your personal standpoint as well. Like, obviously you have this idea, but just, you know, what was sort of for you right when you're done playing? Like there was a gap in between that and this here today.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I got done playing, I left with a knee injury. And when I got my knee fixed, I was trying to make my way back into the league and didn't actually get there. It was a little tough. You know, they didn't like veterans. That's kind of when they started. I didn't like veterans to come in.
Paychecks are too big anymore.
Yeah, paychecks too big. They want too much. You got to sign them for the whole season. It's a lot that goes with it. And I understand the business of basketball now, but, you know, that was a rough patch for me trying to give back and in your mind. And, you know, I was going through a divorce then, and I hit rock bottom and went through depression for a while. Didn't want nothing to do with basketball. Didn't watch basketball. You know, found a lady of mine that I got married to that I knew way back when I was playing in Minnesota. And, you know, just start bringing the light back to me. You know, start focusing, start getting back in church, got saved again. And, you know, the love of the game started coming back. Ended up getting a job with the Big Three. I was trying to do a lot of coaching stuff, doing a lot of things with the NBA, the NBPA, going to courses, going to the leadership programs, coaching programs, not getting hired, not getting, you know, not getting looked at for 4 or 5 years, 6 years. It was depressing, you know, and it's only 3,000 of us, 3,500 of us that ever played the game of basketball. And it's kind of mind boggling how we don't get a job in the NBA and get the chance to share our light and our experience, just kind of use us to play and throw us away. So as a Big Three, start getting myself back together, back on my feet, it starts shining a light on.
Well, that'll be in though. Like if for some reason when it cuts out, but I'm gonna jump over to you here, Chris. Give us a little bit quickly your background as well in the minor league system and, you know, what you've learned as well, because your background's interesting, obviously, with Ricky giving his there and then yours colliding. I think that would be helpful.
Yeah, I mean, I started off local rec stuff in Columbus, Ohio. That's where I'm from. And didn't really understand that minor league existed outside of the NBA and the G League. I thought that was it. You know, I grew up, you know, my favorite player was Allen Iverson, you know, idolized him whenever he left. Dwayne Wade became that guy. And, you know, I just love the sport. I love sports. I'm a much more avid football fan. I'm a Steelers fan. So hopefully you are too, you know, Ben. Yeah. So we could talk about that all day long, but you know, it was basketball and football. Those are the two things. I love it. And, you know, I got introduced to minor league because I do graphic design and I also do apparel. So the league that we were in, we got the apparel deal. I designed all the uniforms for the last 4 years. And through that conversation, you know, I understood how the business side of it worked with the team and you know, the infrastructure that was there. And so my goal was to be able to build an organization, make that kind of transition that to help the league grow, because the value of my property would be able to grow as well. But after getting into it, understanding it, looking at the scope of minor league basketball across everywhere, just realized there wasn't, the model wasn't sustainable outside of what everybody else was doing. And so, you know, if it works for them long-term, great. You know, I wish them nothing but the success that, you know, they're looking for. But our approach is definitely unique whenever it comes to top down. We want our fans to help build the league, not someone come in, I buy a team, we see if it works. We want the community involved. We want the ROI back to our fans. We want the ROI back to our ambassadors. I know one of the things that Ricky was going to mention was, you know, they've built these leagues and after they're done, the paycheck's gone. And like he said, we get the business side of it. We get it. But this is an opportunity for equity, not just for one person who owns the team. I sell it, I move on. This is an opportunity for a collective of people where we see through the advent of cryptocurrency, the advent of social services, the advent of social programming, where there's an opportunity where a collective of people come together for a singular thing. And so that is the idea. Whenever cryptocurrency popped off and started going, I understood, hey, the value of that entity is happening because everybody believes in that thing. What's the one thing that most people can rally around? And that's sports. And so taking that concept of just community opportunity, community engagement, for us to be able to build that out, that's where that transition came from just me owning a team market and being able to jump over to be able to see if this model, what we want to do, works. And then understanding and looking at the scope of minor league basketball within the US, there's a lot of fractionalization. If you look at all the alphabet leagues that are out there, majority of them have just stemmed from another. You know, it's one guy did this and I don't like that, so I'm going to go build my own. Then I don't like him, so I'm going to go build my own. We're approaching it as if nothing else exists besides the NBA and the G League. And we are solely focused on building this initiative here. And so that's where I came from, understanding that, building that out, helping them grow from the design and the apparel aspect. And so now this infrastructure that we've been working on for the last 7-8 months is a unique model that hasn't existed within the scope of basketball. And we believe that it's going to take off.
Closing out here, you know, where can we find out more about the UBL? This is a great conversation, but website, anything else, socials, just so, or even if you're looking for fans to sort of start looking at teams or whatever, you know, where can people go?
Yeah, the UBL.com is our URL. And then all of our social media is the UBL official. So whatever site you go to, just /the UBL official. And that's where we are. Our website that we have right now is very minimal on information for a reason. We are building out a brand new website that will include the cities and all of our fan. It won't have any team names because our fans are going to pick team names. They're going to pick their mask, their logo, their branding. We didn't even get a chance to get into that, but that's the crux, is the community builds the organization. We're just facilitating the process. And so it's going to be limited until our memberships go out and people are able to buy pieces of the team. And then from there, that'll go into a voting pool where they'll be able to decide that from there.
Love that. Well, yeah, Chris, I know Ricky having some tech problems, but appreciate you both coming on. This was awesome. And yeah, excited for the first season.
Absolutely. Appreciate your time, Andrew.